Now, here's John Hanson, and let's get legal.
At 109 on a snowy day downtown, at least. When I was driving in from Downers Grove, it was more of a sleet, but 18 floors up where the river meets the lake. That looks like snow to you, Stephen, right?
It looks like snow.
Okay, so the S-Corp deadline, the March 15th, we're only 2 months away from the everyone's got a
file.
April
15th, yeah.
And it comes so much faster than people realize.
Absolutely. Especially, again, if you have an S-Corp, because you don't even get a lot of the documents until January, and end of January, and then all of a sudden it's due. You know?
If you're working with a CPA, or I'm working with you, the earlier the better. You guys don't like when it's swamped at the last minute, right?
Absolutely true. The earlier the better. And the more likely it is you're going to get it done right on time, because you don't have to stand in, there's not a long line yet.
Right.
Right? Come the day of, or the day before, or the week before, it gets busy in every tax office because people wait to the last minute.
Right.
And then you have to say, well, you know, I got 30 people in front of you.
Can't do it.
Can you do it on time? I'll try.
Yeah.
You know, but we have 30 people in front of you.
Right.
Because they came in yesterday, too.
Now, you can file an extension, but that doesn't mean you're getting an extension from paying, right?
You got to pay. That's right. Yeah, that's a big, a lot of people don't know that. And I have so many people, and I think a lot of accountants don't tell people that. They, oh, we'll just get you an extension. I don't know why they don't tell them. And then they don't realize, people don't realize that they're paying a penalty when you pay in October when it comes due again. They tell you how much you got to pay, but they're not telling you, hey, there's a penalty involved in that, and you're paying more.
Look at the itemized what you're
exactly
paying.
You know, John, when I ask my own clients and anybody, think about yourself, listeners. If I asked you, how much taxes did you pay last year, can you tell me? Most people cannot tell me they paid. And most people say, well, I got a $5,000 refund last year. Well, that's not what you paid in taxes, right? What did you pay?
And how much did you give Uncle Sam?
Yeah, people don't know.
And even if you got a refund, you still gave Uncle Sam a heck of a lot of money.
Exactly.
In fact, if you're getting a big refund, you gave Uncle Sam a loan, an interest-free loan.
Absolutely true.
I think people love the refund, and they like to get it. And I get that. I used to get refunds, and it was like the best time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But my goodness, what you just did was take that loan, spread it out over the 26 payments or however many you get from your employer. You gave the federal government an interest-free loan. And that may just be dollars and cents to some people, rounding errors for some people. But if you had taken that money instead and invested it, it adds up, Stephen.
Absolutely does it. And a lot of people, it would help them in a month-to-month basis.
To have that money in their
when
pocket.
When things are tight, if you've given it to the government, you could use it to pay your rent or pay down your credit card debt or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're giving it to the government to hold on to you.
100%. Let's say you get a $5,000 refund. Okay, that's $600 a month. Did you take on extra credit card debt in any of those months?
Exactly.
Okay, you're hitting 24% on that credit card debt. So the refund money coming back is great. What can people do if they do keep on getting a refund? Are there ways to change your withholdings with your company?
Absolutely.
Like, how does that work?
There's ways to change, because you have a W-4, right? You can go in with your employer and say, and tell, you can detail exactly how much you want them to pay, right? And if you haven't changed much, you can look back at your other couple of years and say, this is what my taxes were. Now you have to kind of fudge a little bit. Mm-hmm. You should probably get something back, unless you're going to pay at the end of the year.
Right.
And
it's not going to be perfect. No one lands at zero.
And so even if you owe a little bit at the end of the year, that's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, people are so used to getting a refund.
Yeah.
I don't want to owe anything.
Right, exactly. That brings with it a whole other can of worms. Saw in the news that the IRS looks like they're going to be laying off some of these temporary workers. Stephen,
amazing?
You just flashed me the most excited look in your eyes I've ever seen you.
I don't know if you saw this too, John. They're sending 2,000 IRS workers down to the border, and they're going to deputize them as immigration people.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah. There's only like 3,200 IRS agents with guns, you know, the criminal division, and 2,000 of them they're sending down to the border.
I know you love it, Stephen. I want to argue against it, though. I want to make a point. You okay for me to make a point?
Yeah, go ahead.
You can fight back as much as you want. Fight back now. Stephen, I feel like when we add more agents, I know that means more oversight over what people are doing. They are definitely being, and they want to see everyone pay what they are supposed to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be diligent about it when there's more agents. My thing is if you're a big fan of DOGE and cutting the size of the federal government, power to you, right? That is a policy that a lot of people love. Shouldn't we also, to balance the budget and bring down the deficit, collect the revenue in which everyone should be paying into, and paying 3,000 extra agents their year's salary to ensure that all the revenue that should be collected is collected, can actually make the federal government more money and, in essence, if they want, pay down their deficit
well,
faster.
Well, here's where I would argue that. Okay. Fact. And it's something that I've been talking a lot about for the last year or more, mm-hmm. in that it's the digitalization of the IRS, that they don't need so many people. One of the arguments that people always put up about the IRS is, well, look, if you compare it to what they're, how many people they had working in 1995, they have a lot less people now. Well, in 1995, about 40% of their work was processing tax returns.
Literally, right? Just looking through paper documents.
Right. Processing the tax returns that came in. And they digitalized them, and three or four people looked at them. And if there's I have this great video that I'd like to show often about the process that it takes to process these tax returns and then have the space, the warehouse space, to store all of that. And now 95% of all tax returns are done electronically. Mm-hmm. And they don't need all those people. And so when they use that as an argument to see we need more, it's like, no, you're using a lot less people to do more work because we have computers. And so I keep talking about AI and computer learning and all of that replaces people. Sorry, it's just the way it works.
No, I understand that. And you're right to point out that they don't maybe need as large of a staff as they did in 1995 or as much allocation to it. I'm just saying, if you're a department based on efficiency, which is literally in the word, the acronym of DOGE, the one department that I don't think you'd want to cut from to keep them efficient is the one collecting the revenue that helps support the government operations.
I get that. But you know what? It's like all of this, you know, what they're finding in every government, and that what I find, and you probably could agree with me, John, is that nobody's really surprised. You know, they don't come out and say, you know, there's a lot of waste here, and people say, oh, that's unheard of.
Of course there's waste.
I can't believe that there's some waste in government.
Right.
It's like everybody knows
of
that
course
that's
there
happening.
Is some, yes.
Some, I think the numbers, the proportion is kind of staggering sometimes, that we wouldn't think that much. But there are some of us who thought that much.
Right. So, and like, it's all in the eye of the beholder, too. What is over redundancies in government, right? Different people can make different arguments. And look, an administration comes in, we'll have to see what the courts end up deciding is legal or not legal on DOGE. And I don't want to get into a whole thing with you, Stephen, because you and I could have a spirited debate
about the size
of federal government.
But this is the way, I think this, we all should have that spirited debate, right? We should all be always debating the size of our government, mm-hmm. right? It's a good debate to have.
Yes.
Right? And yes, they do good things. I don't think many of us won't argue that they do good things, but there's a lot of things they do that aren't so good. And then you say, well, how do I get to those? How do I cut out the waste and keep the good stuff?
Right.
And
it's hard to do.
That's hard to do. Yes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. My only argument was a blanket. Oh, we're getting rid of X amount of agents in the IRS to have some good press. I mean, everyone likes to see that. Like, right?
It does, yeah.
There's a lot of people that are excited about it. I'm just saying, if it ends up us not collecting the revenue that people are supposed to be paying into the federal government, then it doesn't make the government more efficient. It makes it less efficient.
Well, one of the things, you know, and I'm going to mention the free file, right? Mm-hmm. That the IRS I shouldn't say free file, because the free file is that I talk about a lot on this show. I've talked about every year. That was the free file was where corporations like Intuit, who provide free tax return tax prep to people. That program has been in place for a long, long time, but now they have the direct file, and direct file is a IRS they produce this software. But you know, and that's people are against that because they say, well, the IRS didn't have the authority to do that. Mm-hmm. and if their job is to be as you're saying, to go after people who owe money, mm-hmm. that's not doing that, right? That's producing another program that's duplicating something that's already there, and they're spending billions of dollars on it that some in Congress say they didn't have authority to do.
I want to make sure I understand. You don't like the digital free file because you thought that it was already something that you could do that existed
already? It's
already
there, yeah. It's already there.
But aren't they making it like super? Weren't they making it easier to?
Well, that's what they say. I mean,
that way I didn't have to pay. Let's say I just have a W-2.
Yes.
Right. I have a very easy tax filer. And I wanted to go to one of the big box either companies, or I wanted to do the download, the online ones, right? Mm-hmm. The TurboTax, all the other things. That was going to cost me like $180 to do.
Remember last year I gave you the tiny URL of WGN Tax. I don't know if it's still out there, mm-hmm. but the tiny URL. It's free. If you make less than $82,000 a year, mm-hmm. you can get it done for free. That program's been around forever. And only 12% of those that are even eligible to use that system use it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I don't know. But now the government, as you say, you know, nothing's more expensive than when the government gives it away for free. Right, and so somebody's paying for it. It's true you won't have to pay for it, but we shouldn't be putting more on the IRS, as you're saying. Let's use that money to go after people who owe money, which is good enough for me because that gets people
to call you.
But you know, as a guy who makes his living on the IRS, I still support abolishing the IRS. Yeah, will that happen? Probably not.
you support abolishing?
Yeah,
the IRS?
I'm okay with that. I'm okay.
How would we do it?
I talk about the 16th Amendment a lot.
Would you want to abolish income tax too?
That's the 16th Amendment. I'd say, yeah, let's get rid of the 16th Amendment and the 16th Amendment. Because it's like, from whatever source derived, I'm doing a CLE
You'd
on this.
You'd be unemployed if they got rid of the 16th Amendment.
I'd find something else to do.
You would.
I'd find something else
to do. I trust you, Stephen A. Leahy. You would pivot. You were iron worker?
I was iron worker. Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
I said steel. Yeah, I didn't mean it. You were an iron worker. Your family's been a small business family for a long time.
Long time, yeah. So, but again, so I'd find something to do. But is that going to happen? Probably not.
No,
you know, and
it's
I
hard
get
to overturn.
Although I do like the external revenue service that President Trump talks about a lot.
You're a fan of the tariffs.
Well, tariffs are that's the way is the president argues this, and is kind of before the 16th Amendment. How did the government work? They got money.
We don't have to go down the whole. Well, I like how we can respectfully disagree on things, though, Stephen. All right, so
we don't disagree as much as you think, though, John.
No, I don't think so either. I think we both are American-loving people
exactly.
who want the best for the country.
Exactly.
We just sometimes have different visions on how to get there.
I agree with that.
And that's we could.
That's the American way.
I agree.
That's always been the American way.
I wish more people could have frank, honest discussions where people didn't immediately judge you on the other end, took an honest look at the other side, considered it. And then maybe each person gives a little ground.
100%.
That's always my thing.
That's called politics.
That's called politics. Or just, you know, being an American. Boy, we're going to open up the phone lines and the text lines here. Tell you what, we got to take a break before news, but we got about a minute before then. So, Stephen, what is that? We've just been arguing here. We got a whole other half hour.
That's good.
What is it that you do if someone's hearing you and they go, well, wait, what is Stephen's company exactly? Is he just a CPA that does things?
People ask me that a lot. It's like, what is it that you do, Steve?
Exactly.
I help business owners who are facing tax trouble. Okay, whether that trouble, I've been doing this a long time, and what I learned is when people are starting their own business, I was with somebody yesterday. They said, "Well, who is your client?" They said, "Well, my client's a small business owner from $3 million to $5 million." And I'm like, "Well, my people are people who make between $300,000 and $1.5 million,
mm-hmm.
basically. That's the people I help." Business owners that find themselves in trouble because they don't do what I've discovered. They don't keep good records.
Right. They know their business. They don't know how to be a bookkeeper.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of a part of the business, but they don't really think about it that way. And then they find themselves that they owe the IRS because it's hard. There's so many regulations and paperwork, and we're getting more and more. We talk about 1099s,
yep.
and as a business owner, my obligation to send these 1099s out. I had a guy who just hired me. The IRS sent him a form and told him, hey, you owe us $200,000. He's like, why? Oh, you sent us all these 1099s, but you didn't put all their complete Social Security number on them. So now there's withholding, what they call backup withholding. And so if you don't have their Social Security number on a 1099, you're supposed to take 24% of that amount and give it to the IRS. It's called backup withholding. And so he had given out so much in 1099s.
Without Social Security numbers. He
actually had them, but they
said
he didn't.
Okay.
And so then he gets a bill for $200,000.
Long story short, we can talk more after the news. You help people that are having tax problems, or they kind of subscribe to what you do per month so they can ask questions all year long, and then you help them with the tax.
And solve all of their, you know, bookkeeping, QuickBooks, all this stuff that we help people with.
And Stephen then will argue with you at any moment if you'd like. Stephen, we'll talk more. Oh, where can people reach out if they're heading out of the car now?
Call me, 312-664-6649, or go to fightbacknow.com. Get on my free email newsletter list.
All right, fightbacknow.com. I say this every time, Stephen Leahy. We need to create We need to record this part, the commercial break.
Oh, that's
break.
The best time.
Yeah, we had arguments about gerrymandering, about spending.
You know, John, when I had my own show, I would always say, I would talk to people in between because I wanted it
save
all
it for the radio.
I always wanted to be on the radio.
I don't know. Some of these opinions, I'm like, let's just keep that to the commercial break. 312-981-7200. We're chatting with the great Stephen A. Leahy, whose job is entirely supported by the 16th Amendment, and Stephen wants to get rid of it. But that's okay. Fight back
now. Let me say what the 16th Amendment does, right? That's what gave the power to the IRS, to the government to have an income tax, because right. There was a case in 1895, the Pollock case, that said, hey, this is unconstitutional for income tax. So they came up with the 16th Amendment. It passed in 1913.
Because you had to make an amendment to make something constitutional.
That's correct. Right. And so now it is constitutional. But here's what it says. It says that Congress can tax income from whatever source derived. That's the amendment. Mm-hmm. From whatever source derived. So it's so all-encompassing. And one thing that I talk a lot about in my business, because I help businesses who are distressed, right, that they're having problems, is the cancellation of debt, right? 1099-Cs. When you're canceling debt in your business, you don't realize that that could be taxable. And while you're having financial problems, you're creating yourself a lot of financial more financial problems and tax problems because you don't know what the rules are.
So would you argue that the 16th Amendment, which is the Congress, as you're saying, shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, do you wish they had been more specific, at least?
I think it should be narrower.
Approach?
I think it should be narrower. You know, but again, then people find that niche that's out there that's not covered, and
that's where they put all their
and that's
all
what
their
they
income.
Would do, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then, but I guess you could change it. Then you could change it again if you needed to. I know it's we don't change the Constitution very often, and
nope.
We shouldn't. You
no,
know,
it's
to
it's,
be honest with you, you shouldn't.
1992 was the 27th Amendment. Haven't had a new one since.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It should be hard to do.
It should be.
And it is very hard
it
to
is.
Do.
It is, which is why we don't do it very often.
And in this polarized climate, I mean, to find anything that three-quarters of the legislatures, just to remind everyone, two-thirds of both houses have to pass something, nothing for the most part, except for proclamation of some hero day,
yes.
will pass two-thirds majorities, and then three-quarters of the state legislatures
have to
need
pass
to
pass it. Yeah.
Do you see that happening anytime
no,
in the near future?
I don't see it happening. And again, probably rightfully so, because there's got to be a fire amongst the people that want to change something. Now, how the 16th Amendment, there was a fire amongst Congress to find a way to get
pay.
The money.
Right.
They needed the money, and this is what they came up with. So, but again, we hear the president talking all the time. What did we do before the 16th Amendment? And we existed on tariffs, and we were stronger than ever. I don't know if that's true or not, that we were stronger than ever. You know, our government needs funding. That's true. Are they overfunded, in my opinion? The answer is yes, obviously. I think it's obvious. I think it's obvious to most people.
Well, we have a $36 trillion debt.
Well, exactly.
So I don't think that passes the muster of that it's fiscally responsible.
Well,
and I get that some debt is okay. Debt helps you lend. It helps you.
Are you
gain.
Familiar with the impoundment, right? Impoundment? Where
my car was impounded that one time on a lower whacker. I remember that, Stephen. I'm very familiar.
Well, impoundment is when it happened in 1972, where they require the executive branch to spend all that money.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So,
so you
have to spend it.
Nixon challenged that he could not spend the money that Congress had allocated, meaning Congress gave, I'm just using round numbers, mm-hmm. Health and Human Services, let's say they gave them $1 billion. Nixon wanted to say, no, well, let's just spend $900 million of that, save $100 million. And the Supreme Court ultimately ruled that. Did it get that far? I think so. Maybe an appellate court.
I don't know.
I'll look it up.
But
essentially said, no, Congress has allocated the funds for that amount of time. Those funds must head out the door. And this is what President Trump is arguing, maybe, that he wants to challenge.
Well, this is one of the problems, which, in my opinion, this is why we have $36 trillion in debt, because our agencies have to spend it all, right? And we've all heard the stories that at the end of the year that they just start spending money like crazy because mm-hmm. they'll lose the money and it won't be funded and this or that. And so there's got to be somebody that can hold the line and say, you know, aren't we wasting this money? This is taxpayer money. Maybe we shouldn't waste it.
If you add up all the salary of every single federal government employee that's not military, It represents about 4.5 to 5% of the entire budget. So yes, that you can lay off people, but that is not the big chunk that it's taking out that some people think it is, though, Stephen.
Well, it's a start, and you know, I think all of us, when we hear that, and I can tell you that the IRS still has 90% of their people at home, right? And so people are saying, well, maybe you should come to the office. Maybe, well, I'm more productive at home. I don't know. There's some evidence.
I don't have any problem with the federal government saying come back to the office.
No, I don't either. And I have remote workers, and I
maybe there's a balance
and
to be struck.
And they're and they're productive, and right. I get that. You know, but again, we shouldn't be tying our own hands to commit suicide, right?
Right.
And it's like, well, no, there's nothing you can do.
Right. I think that this idea that that you're going to balance the budget through these means of cuts only is a little naive when you have gigantic entitlement programs that are really sucking a lot of money out, not down the drain. They're going to people that are entitled to these benefits. I'm not advocating for cutting Medicare or Social Security benefits for people that have paid into it, but something drastic like that will have to happen, or you've got to gain more revenue. Which I know you don't love.
No, well, it's hard.
It's going to take both parties to swallow a pill that they don't want to swallow.
Because there's only two ways to do it, and I talk about budgets all the time, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I help people do, come up with a budget, how you're going to pay the IRS. So you either have to make more money, which means taxing more, or you have to spend less. That's all. That's right. That's your two choices.
It might be
choices.
A combination of both.
And yes, maybe it probably has to be.
If you cut every dollar of discretionary spending, meaning not the entitlement programs, just the discretionary numbers out there, if you still cut it, we'd still have a deficit.
Yeah,
so it has to be a combination of the two things. Now, how you do it and how you get there is worth arguing over.
I
just wish we had a Washington right now that could handle big things like this in a way that was honest, took out some of the politics, but brought back some of the idea of compromises, and that you are not going to agree. No American should ever agree with anything that's in every single law or agree with everything that one politician tells you.
The only thing I would say to that, John, is it's never been that way. So it's always been contentious. It's always been that way. I don't know. You know, I don't know one time in history where we can go back and say, oh, that Congress was good.
Oh, Tip O'Neill leading Democrats, and Reagan pushing bipartisan bills. Let me give you one more. Newt Gingrich, who the left has vilified and continues to vilify, worked with President Clinton on welfare reform.
I agree. I understand. I remember that very well when Newt Gingrich took over the House for the first
94.
Time for the Republicans.
In 48 years.
Yeah, so it was a big deal.
I'm saying there's examples from the 80s and 90s of Congresses from the opposite party of the president coming together to have something that both parties hated in some ways and both parties liked. And nothing like that happens unless you have the House, the Senate, and the president all the same party. People were touting Joe Biden's bipartisan infrastructure bill. Yes, he did get some Republican senators to vote for it, but it was gone through the House, basically, through the Democratic system. Mm-hmm. President Trump's tax cuts that a lot of people love back in 2017 added a little bit to the deficit. That's aside from me, Stephen. but it was passed through Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican president. When we have the divided government, which I think can be a really good thing and a useful thing for this country, divided government, we don't seem capable of doing anything. And that's where I think we need to get back to.
I think the people of Illinois would like to have a divided government or the people of California might want a divided government because they've been
run. They
don't
vote that way.
I know, and this was, I get it. But that's kind of what we were just talking about in between, and how the one party can manipulate how things are done, and it kind of just perpetuates their own fiefdom.
Right, fiefdom.
Using David Hochberg.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh.
This is what's so great about being an IRS attorney. Mm-hmm. We could talk about these things, and it's what I kind of do.
You know it.
I'm so involved in the way the IRS is working and the inner workings of all of this. I'm so interested in it. So
anyone that's not concerned about the national debt needs to check themselves.
I agree.
The vast majority of people look at $36 trillion and the fact that our interest payments on our national debt are greater than the entire military budget for a year. That's scary.
First time ever.
And that's scary.
Yeah.
This needs to be addressed. but we need to be able to have solid arguments representing all sides of this and be able to have honest conversations. And ultimately, the solution needs to be something that everyone hates a little bit of.
I think at this point, there's no good solution. There just isn't.
Okay, we got to take a break. We're lighting up the text line and the phone line, Stephen. We should talk about tax stuff at some point. Does anyone have
That's
text?
All tax stuff. This You're is right. all tax stuff.
You're right. 312-981-7200 WGN. It's John Hansen and Stephen A. Leahy on our new show, Taxes, Tariffs, and... No, I'm just kidding. It's called Let's Get Legal. I was trying to come up with some clever name for our show, Stephen. The show behind the show.
I'm trying... I have a new book coming out called Tax Traps and...
You should probably know the name of your own book.
I know. Well, I'm just coming up with the name because I wrote the book. It's about 1099s. It's about 1099s. My son is helping me write this book.
Oh,
actually,
cool.
I wrote the book. He's helping me put it together. He's a tax attorney, too.
Oh, nice. Does he work for you or no?
No, he works for the Illinois Attorney General's Office.
Oh, okay.
So
he's a government employee?
Yeah.
Or no, he's a contractor to the
government? No, he's a government employee. You know what that means? He's not working on Monday.
Yeah. Stephen, that is the richest thing you've ever told me, that your son is a government employee.
Well, you think I'd never let him hear it?
That is just the little cherry on top of my Sunday today, knowing that Stephen's son, who does great work,
yes, I'm sure he does,
and helps save the government money doing things the right way, works for the government. That gives me
he
such
helps
joy.
The government collect.
Yes. Oh, that gives me... Wait.
Because he's on the Attorney General. He represents the state of Illinois.
So he helps...
So he goes to court a lot to get money for the state.
So father wants to abolish the 16th Amendment, limit how the government collects money, and your son, who you love...
I love him to death.
Helps the government collect money.
We're on the same page a lot.
I understand. And those two things, and this is, I think, exactly the point. These two things can exist in the same world and be okay.
I wonder if he'll be texting me now.
Okay, so you're writing a book. What is it about? 1099?
Actually, you know, I do a lot of continuing education, legal education, mm-hmm. Across the country for tax professionals and attorneys. And I've done a lot about 1099s. I started with 1099Cs. We talked a little bit about that here, cancellation of debt and how that's income. And I started that through when I worked with people with foreclosures, and people would go through a foreclosure and then get a 1099C and realize all that money that they were forgiven, that they sold the house for, you thought you got to walk away from, all of a sudden you're taxed on it.
Yeah.
Now, they did change that through Congress, and that expires in 2026. But right now, if that happened to you, you'd be able to, you wouldn't have to pay taxes on it.
But if the Trump tax cuts don't get renewed, then that could go away.
No, 2000, it was put in.
A different thing.
It was a different law that was passed after the foreclosure debacle. You know, so people were finding themselves with this 1099C problem, and so they gave them an out. Because there were so many people involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of, I do a lot of things about, so not 1099Cs, and we talk about 1099Ks. That's something I kind of wanted to talk about today. We haven't gotten to
it. No, let's do it. What's a 1099K?
The 1099K, I'm getting a lot of, calls now because it was passed from the American Rescue Act, they changed, that's from the third party, like PayPal, Venmo, all that stuff, right? So it used to be if you had to do $20,000 and 200 transactions before you got a 1099K. And the new law came out and said, no, now it's going to be $600 no matter how many transactions.
Just like any other 1099s the ones for income
they're different.
Or contractor is $600.
That's right. The NEC, 1099.
Non-employment compensation.
Yes, exactly.
I have a lot of those.
And that just started in 2020.
Right.
That used to be in the 1099 miscellaneous.
Yeah. All right. We're running through letters. So
I know.
The 1099K, now this is a law that had passed, but has been delayed a couple times.
Well, and this is this is a big to do in the IRS world is like, who gave the IRS permission to implement the law as they see fit? Well, one of the problems is they weren't geared up for that because the number of 1099s. Okay, so
the number of people that pay people through Venmo or PayPal is so astronomical that when the law passed, it didn't take into consideration that, oh my goodness, oh, they're not capable of handling this, the IRS.
So then it went, they skipped a year, and then they went to $10,000. This year it's $5,000, $5,000 or more. So more and more people are getting involved in it. They're getting these 1099-Ks, and they don't know what it is. Next year it goes to $250, I mean $2,500, and then the year after that it goes to $600, which is what the law is.
I want to make people understand. So if you this year had in Venmo paid people, another person, more than $5,000.
If you received. And actually it's 2024.
Okay, last year.
That's right. Yeah.
Thanks, Stephen. Yeah. You're right. 2024, if you got more than $5,000, you're going to get a 1099 on it.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm at the IRS website. It says payment you got from family and friends, so not for income, should not be reported to Form 1099-K.
That's true.
So my question is when I'm on Venmo, that's the app we use, but I know everyone has Zelle or some other ones, it has me delineate between friends and family
or
for work.
You can do that, yes.
So if I did all friends and family for legitimate repayments, I owe you this for that, and let's say that added up to over $5,000, which could probably happen between parents, kids, spouses, then that shouldn't come to me, right?
Or it shouldn't.
But it might.
Because remember now, these big organizations, they want to protect themselves from the IRS because there's a lot of penalties if they don't send them.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than error on your side,
they're going to
err on the side of the IRS. And so you're going to get them. And then they'll say, well, don't worry about it. It's not taxable.
Well, the government gets it.
But you have to prove it's not taxable.
Well, right, because the government's going to get a copy of it.
Yes.
The IRS is going to know I got a 1099.
Yes.
If you get a 1099, the IRS has one too.
Yes. And that's where they start coming in. That's why I talk about all the tracking all the time. And that's why I talked about 1099 so much, because that's why they're tracked. That's how they're tracking us, right? And I talk about AI and how the IRS has implemented AI programs and computer learning. And we talked about it at the beginning of the show, why we don't need as many people, because these programs are taking over and tracking all of us. And, you know, just to be clear about, like, I talked about 1099 NECs, which started in 2020. One of the reasons why they want the 1099 NEC is so everybody gets a 1099 NEC, also has to pay on self-employment tax. And so if it was on the miscellaneous, it might get lost. So now they know if you got a 1099 NEC, did you pay your self-employment tax?
So they wanted to delineate a specific payment as NEC to isolate those so that the IRS was more clear and easy to say, hey, you owed this.
Automatically. Because now they can look at your tax return and say, because there's a special line for self-employment tax. Did they put anything in that line? And
well,
so they know right away.
This is where I'm glad they did it.
I understand. It's not that I'm not unhappy about that. You should pay your taxes, and that's, you know, that's the law. We all agree to that. But the minute tracking gets a little bit much. And one of the things is, okay, so in the situation I just named, yeah, it should be that way. But when I'm giving money to my family and friends, and the onus comes on me to prove that that's not taxable income, that becomes a problem. Becomes a problem.
Someone just texted about our argument about the allocating of funding that the president is administration has to spend it. That's what the Supreme Court has ruled. Yeah, we said that. Mm-hmm. That is the rule right now. Mm-hmm. It may be challenged, and we'll see what the scope
empowerment.
Is.
Yes,
empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring up one thing about you, Stephen. I think maybe some people listen and go, "Well, if I hire this guy, all he's going to be trying to do is find ways for me to get out of paying taxes." You are not that person.
No.
You guys follow the letter of the law, and you are just trying to make sure people understand what they are entitled to save.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm not one of those guys trying to save you as much money as possible.
100%.
Because all you're doing is causing yourself more problems, because you don't want the IRS auditing you. Because even if you do everything right, if you get into an audit, it's going to cost you money and time and frustration. It just does. And you don't want to go there. So you're better off doing what they say and proving that I'm doing what they say than to be pushing the envelope. I don't push envelope. I don't think you should. Again, all you're doing is causing trouble for yourself.
Yeah, you're the kind of tax person I'd want, which is why I hired you. Because you have a natural skepticism and reluctance to handing over all my money.
Yeah.
But you have a firm belief in the letter of the law, and also not a fear, but you do not want your clients to have to interact with the IRS more than they would have to.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really good balance to have, because some big box CPAs are going to go, let's give you this, that, the other thing, because they're not going to get a call when you get audited. They're gone. They're not a name.
And one of the worst things that you can do, and is if you get audited, go to your CPA and say, hey, can you represent me on this? Because that's not what they do. And they have an interest in, because they did the work, right? If they made mistakes, they don't want, they're not going to admit to their mistakes. It's going to be your, so there's a conflict of interest there. Yeah. So always go get a third party, like, and get an attorney. And I know nobody wants to hire an attorney, but we're trained to have this conflict and advocate for people. A CPA is not an advocate. Right, they're not. That's not their job.
So, someone employs you guys. What you have, you charge a monthly fee. Mm-hmm. That it means that someone can call you in September or October, mm-hmm. saying, "I have a question about this. Did I bookkeep this right?" Your staff helps people out. Come tax time, a lot of the people that work with you, they know what's already under the hood. It makes life a little easier. So, the people that help you out all year long, Stephen A. Leahy and your team. It makes tax time easier and more.
And that's the goal.
It's the goal.
And to keep them away from you, right?
Yeah.
And as
the IRS,
I keep talking about, I keep talking about this because you're going to have more, everybody's going to have more and more interaction with the IRS because they're tracking you. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to send you letters throughout the year. Maybe 10 years ago, they didn't. They didn't have that capability. But now it's all done electronically, automatically. There's no person sending you a letter. It's an automatic letter. Comes from the system. They're matching. And so you're going to get a lot more contact with the IRS than ever before. And you need someone that's going to explain it to you.
Right? Small businesses, if you're listening right now, that's who you want to be having to make a call over to you, Stephen.
Yep.
Help you out with the bookkeeping. If you're someone that's a small business and you've never tracked your mileage, you don't know this, that, and the other thing, you didn't know that there was a deductible for this. Maybe you're renting from yourself for space in your own building. Maybe you aren't, and you should be. There's tax deductions that come along with that. Stephen A. Leahy and your team, you make sure that people get what they are entitled to and don't give more than they're supposed to. We got 20 seconds. How can people reach you?
Go to fightbacknow.com. Sign up for my email newsletter. It's a daily email. Go there, sign up, doesn't cost anything, or call me if you have a question, 312-664-6649.
One more time with the phone number.
664-6649, 312.
Steven, get some rest. I'm glad you're not driving home with Hochberg.
I am not.
You can take an Uber, or what are you going to do?
My son lives over, so I'm going to go visit with him.
The one that works for the government?
Yes.
Okay, time for the news on WGN.